Now we are live. And this is Karen Casper from Northern Michigan University, and I am interviewing...
Jerry Koski from Ontario.
Okay. And I've been told to ask you about log homes.
Well, where do we start? I guess from the beginning.
Yeah.
I'm originally from Iron River area, Caspian. I got transferred here serving with the federal government, U.S. Forest Service. And it was a dream of mine my whole life to start building log homes. So when I came to Ontonagon in 73, then I started in 1976. So actually, 75 is when I built the first one. And then, which is typical Finnish sauna, that's what we did, and built that. And then I continued serving at the same time. And then in 76, I got married. 1976, 77, something like that. 76. And then we decided that we would start a business of building log homes, but continuing with my surveying career too. So anyway, we were building our house, and a guy stopped at our house at the time, and he said, "Well, I'd like to have one of these." And I said, "Well, this is mine." And he said, "Well, build me one too." And I said, "No, I can't, because I'm, I have a full-time job." And he says, "Well, looks like you got a lot of energy." He said, "This is the exact words he used. He says, why don't you start a business and, build me one?" So I talked it over to Linda, and that's what we decided to do. And we did build a couple of saunas for other people, and then the demand started more and more, and I started hiring people and training and building. And then I started advertising all over. So we've been all over the country, Wyoming, Nebraska, Pennsylvania, Kansas, all over Lower Michigan. And you know why they built the Mackinac Bridge?
Why?
So all the trolls that live below the bridge can get to heaven, the UP.
Yeah.
I like to put a little humor in, too, when I'm talking about something. And we started with, again, repeating, we hired people in training, and... my foreman was with me for 33 years. Pete Walters was his name, good man. And then our son, as he grew up, he had to work out in the log yard, which is right behind our house, which is good and bad. And he went to Northern for a couple of years, and anyway, I came back to work, and I was hoping that he would take over. And he got killed on a motorcycle 16 years ago. And then I had five employees at one time, and we decided that we went 46 years of building and never had an accident. And 2 years ago, when I turned 80, my foreman wanted to retire. Also, he was 62. So I decided that it's time to quit. And we went 46 years without an accident. And I'm a firm believer of the law of averages. So it was a matter of time. What we do is very dangerous. Everything's done with chainsaws. And we're traveling, 1,000 miles. So, because what we did is we built them here. We built the whole house here, take it all apart, put it on the semis, and take off and go and put it all back together. But it takes 2 to 3 months to build it first, because it's all built with chainsaws. So the part where the danger is with you're climbing on logs, you're cutting with chainsaws, big saws, and then traveling. And I was always, what would happen if we're traveling from here to Kansas, and we're almost in Kansas, and we get an accident, and there's logs all over the highway. So there was a lot of stress on my part of the planning and coordinating and getting the motels organized, getting all the lumber there that from the lumberyard in that area, dealing with somebody that didn't know, I didn't know, they didn't know me. And the planning of that stage, the stress was a lot more than I would let on to people that they would know. Right, Billy? Because I try to keep that for myself, not to my men. And so I decided that it was time. So we bunched her, and we have one more in our yard right now. That's number 175.
Wow. that's a lot.
Yeah, and of course we build with big logs. Some of them were, 36 inch on a butt, which I showed you a picture of one. 8,000 pounds, because when we're lifting the logs, there's scales on the cranes. Because we'd hire cranes from the area. We wouldn't bring ours because it costs too much money to bring it. So it was cheaper to hire. So anything else? And the sad part, that our business is in our backyard. We have acreage behind our house. So how do you sell something like this? And plus, it's all handcrafted. You have to be an artist, number one, and you have to be able to be good with a chainsaw. So it's going to be over. It's going to be history. And I was talking to Carol, and I told her, I said, eventually this will be non-existent. And we advertised that in the Builder Show in Marquette for years. Went to the show in the Dome. First, we started in a ice arena. That's where the first Builder shows were in Marquette.
Lakeview Arena.
Yep.
Yep.
So we started going there, and I believe 84, somewhere around there. And then eventually it went into the Dome. When we'd go there every year, we would get a job every year. Yeah. Unreal. One year we required $10,000 down. And one year we came home with two checks.
Wow.
We got two jobs. And we haven't been there now in the last 4 years, I think. Because it was 2 years before the ugly pandemic. And because I decided we have to stop sometime, and so I might as well stop advertising. And you saw that picture of our ad that we did there. So it's over, and when I was talking to Carol, she said, we should get this in history, because eventually it's going to be gone.
Now, how did you learn how to build these homes?
Well, what it is, I'm the third generation log crafter. My grandfather in Finland was a log builder, and he moved to Caspian, Michigan, and he built a couple of buildings there, and then my dad built with him, and then my dad built a few, and then he worked for the CCCs, and he built, there's a little building in Iron River on a corner that he helped build. And it was a dream of mine my whole life to do this. It was just right from a little kid. And I grew up as a carpenter because my dad stopped building. My grandfather died in 38 and I was born in 41, so I never got to meet him. But it was just a dream of mine to do this. And so I got some books and did a lot of reading on it and studying. Tim Bullock was one of the books. B. Allen Mackey had a book out. But a lot of their books were set up so you would take their course. They were teaching in Canada, and they wouldn't give you all the little. I just started experimenting and practicing. I built a sauna in 75, and I didn't have. I asked my dad. I says, give me some pointers. He gave me some pointers in the beginning before I read any books. But he said it's in the blood. Do it. It'll work. And I remember Linda asking me a lot of times, she said, how do you know what you're doing? I said, I don't know. It's there. It's just because there weren't any books when I started, and you're going to run into problems all the time, and you have to solve those problems. So she would ask, how do you know what you're doing? I said, I don't know. I have a problem, and I just solved it. And being a builder, all my whole life was part of it, but it was just there. So... And then our son, so he was the fourth generation. And I don't know this for sure, but because the log buildings died in the 30s, they went to 2x4s, I'm wondering if we're probably, there are some two generations, which are in our Log Crafters Association, there are. I don't know of any three, but being four, I don't think there's, I don't know how you'd ever search this, but we're probably the only ones that have four generations in the log crafting business. Because it died for all those years, from the 30s up into the 70s when B. Allen Mackey started and Tim Bullock started building. And I was one of the first builders around here, because the first one I built was 1975. And that's about when they started. So it was just a dream, and it was there, and just developed... through practice, and I don't know, it was just there. It's just like when you study history, all the different cultures, the Italians, they were flat workers, concrete. The Germans were precision with tools. You know, every society seemed like the Finns were the builders. The Swedes were builders. The Norwegians were builders, that area. It seemed like all these different cultures had their own talent that they were born with. And you know, we used to call it genes and chromosomes, you know. And then they found out such thing as DNA. And the DNA carries your blue eyes and your dark hair and your blonde hair. And it carries that knowledge. Like that little, I always remember that on TV, that little Japanese boy. He was 3 years old and he was doing calculus. And his both parents were mathematicians. I mean, nobody taught him, it was there.
Yeah.
And they didn't understand that. Of course, that was back in the 60s. And you know, the kid was a genius.
Mm-hmm.
So it's through DNA, I would say.
So now what about your surveying career?
Well, the surveying career was very something I enjoyed very much. I got paid to run around the woods every day because I was a deep wood surveyor for the Forest Service. And my specialty was retracing the original survey from the 1840s into the 1850s, because there was nothing here in the UP then, and there was just the miners and the Indians. And in 1837, when Michigan became statehood, they sent William Burt and his two sons and I believe a brother. I think it was Wells was his brother. John and Austin were his sons. And William Burt came up here at 55 years old and started surveying the UP. And the milepost zero was in Lower Michigan, so he came all the way up. And so they, you know, surveying is a very complicated subject. And to make it simple, the section is approximately a mile square. They're really not square. It's called a rectangle system of surveying, because as they're coming north, they had compasses. That's what they were using. They didn't have GPS like we have now.
No.
So as they're coming north, they're continually going toward the North Pole. So they're actually not squares. They're rectangles.
Yeah.
And they didn't have the modern equipment that we have to measure. They had it was called a chain. It was 66 feet long, and it was an actual chain, and there were links 6.66 inches long, or tenths, and 7.92 inches, 66 hundredths long, each link. And they pulled that thing through the woods, measuring. Did some extremely accurate work. Well, I got really involved that in '62 when I started surveying in Iron River area, and I just loved it, because I'm retracing their footsteps and trying to. And what they did is when they came to the corner, you know, of the mile, every half mile they had a corner. And when they came to that corner where the four would be the intersection, they'd cut a post, cut a tree down, and they'd drive a post in the ground. And then I didn't bring any bearing trees along, but they took two trees from that and they measured to that post and took the bearing to that post and recorded it. Well, the funny part was, or I don't know the word funny, but they were anticipating people coming here right away. You know, they were just going to, because Lower Michigan was already established, so they were going to come up here and establish the UP. So they only put a wood post in. And remember, there was nothing here. There was no roads.
Yeah.
There was no railroads. There was just the trails from the miners. So instead of carrying iron pins that would last forever, they just put a wood post. So, and you know, this was in late 40s and early 1850s. So, we had their field notes as they were measuring. They as they started from the point, they would talk about you know, intersecting a stream, so many chains, so many links, and then along the line, if they had a big boulder, they would measure to that boulder. So we started monumenting these corners with actual concrete monuments. Well, I got really just involved with that. I just thought this is so, because history is something that's the only thing I got straight A in high school was history. So anyway, so I thought, you know, if I could put my left foot where his left foot was and my right foot where his right foot and take the same number of steps, because he's measuring, you know, 5280 close, that I'd end up same point he would. And going on a straight line, you know, that would be, and trying to find these bearing trees and these posts that they had. Well, we only found three original posts in those my 32 years of surveying. One of them went to the chief's office in Washington, and one is here in Ontonagon. I made a glass case for it. And one went to the regional forester's office in Milwaukee. And the ones that we found were always underwater because it was preserved just like a ship out in the ocean, you know, or in the Great Lake, like Superior.
Yeah.
So that was the only three posts we found. We were looking for the bearing trees, which we had all their notes from the original field notes. And so a lot of them were falling down, some were burnt, you know, a lot of them were just decayed because if they used an aspen, that didn't last for that long, from, you know, 1854, say, to 1962 when I started. And there was times, you know, I couldn't even sleep at night. I was thinking, okay, I couldn't find anything, but yet we had to monument that corner because we were separating the government land from the private land. So you can't just say, well, okay, forget it. And we found a lot of bearing trees at that time, and they were in bad array of decay. They were all decaying. The ones that lasted were the cedar, of course, and then the white pine was another good one, but if they used a balsam tree as a bearing tree, no, they were already rotted and gone. So then we started, after we'd get the corners in, that we would run transit lines between them and mark that line between government and private. So that's about, you know, surveying. You can go on for days because it's the second oldest profession in the world. I don't know if you know that. Did you know that?
No.
The first is prostitution.
Yeah.
That surveying is the second. Somebody asked me one time, well, why is it the second? I said, because as long as there was two people on Earth, they had to divide the land up. And it is actually this. And one nice thing in my career, we came from measuring with a steel tape and tension pullers on there and thermometers on there when we were doing the fifth correction line in the state boundary line. There was some really accurate measuring that we were doing to GPS, you know, from the satellites. And I remember the head surveyor in Milwaukee, matter of fact, funny, he was the head surveyor and his name was Vic Hedman. And then in 65 or something like that, or 68, 65 around there, he brought this electronic measuring device up. It was a geodometer. It was about 2 feet square, about 8 inches high, it weighed about 60 pounds, needed a 12-volt battery to run this thing, and it was experimenting. Measuring electronically, and I remember standing there, and we were trying to get this thing to work, and we were there for like 3 hours. We finally got it to turn on and work, and I said, you know, we were trying to measure 100 feet. I said, I could have measured that 80 million times already with a tape, but he said, Jer, this is the future, and he says, and now this is in 68, and one of the first, that was around there, 67, something like that, when they went up to the around the space. He said, eventually, there will be satellites up there. There wasn't any at that time.
Yeah.
He said, there's going to be, I don't remember if he called them satellites, but he said, there will be things orbiting the Earth that we will get coordinates from and coming back to here. And I looked at him, and I thought, well, is this guy out of this? But he was the head man. He was in charge of 9 states, head surveyor. And lo and behold, in my career, we went from measuring with a tape to the satellites. So that's how fast we'd advanced in just those 32 years.
Yeah.
So I got paid to run around the woods for 32 years, which I loved, other than some of the swamps that we had to go in, and mosquitoes. And
yeah.
In the corners, you know, they ended up in swamps wherever they did, you know, after measuring. So you had to go there. And I'd been in places that I know no other human being's been there other than those surveyors, because nobody in their right mind would go there.
Yeah.
You know, I've been in muck up to my chest, you know, and... But that's where we'd find stuff too, because nobody disturbed it. And in the swamps was cedar. And of course, cedar trees, as you know, last a long time.
So, anything else?
Well, what would be interesting in the surveying part, some of the lines that were really crooked, because when the original surveyors came up here, they got paid by the mile. And they got $8 a mile in the 1850s. So there was a one surveyor that William Burt's work and all the Burt crew was exceptional. They, when we're measuring electronically, you know, they said it was 5280.3. We'd measure it electronically and be 5280.2. You know, this much difference. I mean, it was just amazing. That's on the fifth correction line, which is another. As they're going north, they're coming. Eventually, they're going to come to a point. So every so many miles, they're supposed to every 24 miles, then they start going north again. So they call it a correction line. So they corrected the measuring, so everything was 5280 east and west. And then they start, and there's a 3 mile offset. That's how much they're coming as they're going to the north there. Well, there was one surveyor, Merriweather was his name, which is there's a town named after him. He was crooked, so he got paid so much a mile. So when he didn't realize that there's magnetic attraction too from the iron, and what he did is he wrote false field notes. He didn't even measure it. So some of those, he ended up going, instead of, let's say, due north, he was going north 12, 10 degrees east. So that, when we actually measured across, was 600 feet longer than 5280. So there was a lot of problems there because he lied. You know, he didn't even put anything in there. And what they would do, this is getting complicated and all, but they would random east for a mile and then intersect the point that they already put in, and then they would correct it back how much they missed it by. Well, what I figured he did, he didn't random east. He said he corrected west. So what I figured he did, he corrected east only. He didn't do that other, I don't know if I'm losing you or not, but he didn't do that other half a mile. So usually you're measuring backwards following his notes on a corrected line. So I said, you know what? I bet you he didn't even do that. Because we knew he lied. So we just start using his random as his corrected line. And I start finding his points in the town 52, range 35, or it's over by Alston area. And I start finding his points where most of the guys are going the other way. So they are 400 or 500 feet from where they are supposed to be. And once you find the original corner, if you can prove it that's original, that stands. You can't change it and make it square and say, okay, it's going to be 5280. If you can prove it, that, and if you, do you come through Berga to get here?
Yes.
On the way back, what the heck's that? The flowage there, where the, goes down to the river there. That road is going down a section line. Well, should be straight, right? For 5 miles? It isn't. It goes like this. There's angles. So one of the guys, surveyor back a long time ago, you know, not in the 1800s, but in the 1920s, he started from a wrong corner.
Oh.
Because he didn't know.
Yeah.
And there's all kinds of problems, people building on property that they didn't really know. Well, we started finding the original corners, and some of them had to go to court, and because that's still original. And that's the way the first patent was sold, from that description. Yeah. So it was pretty interesting, and I actually got an award for figuring that out. So,
that's good.
But I would sometimes sleepless nights. I would lay there thinking, you know, but I just got so involved in the retracement. It was just exceptional, fun. I think.
Did you explain the bearing trees?
I didn't bring one.
But
he did explain bearing trees.
Yeah, they blazed the tree, took the bark off, and they scribed the town, the range, and a section. And then on the bottom, they did the same, and they scribed BT, which means bearing tree, and they made a notch. And they measured from that notch to that post, and they recorded it north 20 degrees east, 5 links, you know, so, like that. And, you know, we found a lot of them in the 60s. Right now, there are very few, because, you know, from the 60s to now is a long time. The decay, they're gone. So...
Okay, and is there anything else, or are we done now, or?
It's hard to do what I'm doing, you know. I talked to a ladies' club one time here. They had a ladies' club. And I said, how long do you want me to talk on surveying? And they said, 15 minutes, you know, and I said, okay. I was there for an hour and a half. because they start asking questions. Because you know, surveying is everybody has property, and then the Historical Society had one of my presentations, or we have once every we have a dinner meeting once a month. You know that?
No, I didn't.
Oh, we have a dinner meeting once a month. It's our Historical Society is very involved, and we have a speaker every month, and I'm on the board. So every one of us, and there's 12 of us, and the reason there's 12 months, we have to come up with a speaker. So one year I said, okay, I'll just talk on surveying, and I brought, you know, transits there, and I brought bearing trees and all that. And it usually, our speaker usually goes anywhere from 15 minutes to half hour, and they're done with their talk. I was there for an hour and a half, and what happened was the people, again, they start asking questions. I kept on saying, in a lot of these historical societies, people are old. And, you know, they're, I have to go to the bathroom. And I said, you know, if you want to leave, leave. I was supposed to be done 25 minutes ago. Well, they kept on going on and on. And they did actually record that.
Good.
We have a recording. One of my friends recorded it. But it went on and on and on, and because they asked questions.
Yeah.
So as far as, you know, I could go forever on surveying because it's something I love, and log building both.
Okay. And I think we are done now, and so I'm going to turn it off.